National Podcast Day is September 30th, but what is National Podcast Day? It's pretty simple and you can help spread the word. National Podcast Day is dedicated to promoting podcasting worldwide through public engagement. You may be asking, what can I do to get involved with National Podcast Day? It's easy. Head over to nationalpodcastday.com and check the suggestions, but ultimately these options are endless. Remember, September 30th, nationalpodcastday.com, and let's start the conversation.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Last First Date Radio, featuring interviews with experts in dating, relating, and mating in midlife. And now, here's your host, Sandy Weiner.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Last First Date Radio. I'm really glad you joined us here today. We have a great show. I just want to tell you a little bit about me if you're new to the show. My name is Sandy Weiner, and I am the founder of LastFirstDate.com. I am the dating and relationship coach for women over 40 who want to gain the confidence and hope to love again. Many people are shut down about loving, finding love. It's a very risky practice, especially if you've been out of practice for a long time. So I'm here to give you the skills and the tools that it takes to improve your love life, find love, attract the love that you deserve. We really have a great show for you today. I'm going to be speaking with Dr. Jeanette Raymond. We're going to be talking about the fear of intimacy and ways to manage it in relationships. This is something that comes up a lot. And I read her book called Now You Want Me, Now You Don't, and it's an excellent book. And we're going to be discussing the book and discussing many different aspects of fear of intimacy in just a few minutes. But first I want to just tell you why I created LastFirstDate.com and why I created this radio show. I got divorced after 23 years of marriage, and I married my husband because I was trying to divorce-proof my life. I came from the home of divorce. My parents got divorced actually as I was getting married. They stayed together for many, many years, 29, I think. And it was 29 not so great years. It was difficult to watch a relationship that was very dysfunctional. And I set out to do different, to do better, and chose a husband who I thought was safe, somebody who I thought had the right values and would be a good father and a good husband to me, somebody I could trust to be there for me and have my back. And it's really hard to divorce-proof your life. You can't go in knowing what's going to happen, but you actually can go in knowing how to improve relationships, how to have a better outcome. I was pretty clueless. I was pretty much dating in the dark at the time. And after my divorce, I realized that so many relationships fail, and I wanted to get to the bottom of why we have so many problems sustaining healthy relationships, loving relationships that last. And so what I discovered are many things, but at the very foundation of great relationships is the most important person in the world, which is you. Knowing yourself, knowing your true self-worth, and living your most authentic, vibrant life. That is so essential to finding the right person for you. So my motto is, be the love that you wish to attract in the world. You've got to really clear out all the blocks that you have, the negativity, the I dare you to cross this line kind of thing that you might be bringing to dating. This is a complex, many multi-layered issue, and I'm not going to tell you everything you need to know right now because I want to get to our guest, Dr. Jeanette Raymond, in just a second. But I just wanted to let you know that I have many programs on my website that you can check out that would help you no matter what stage you are in dating or relationships. And one of my favorite programs is my Last First Date Inner Circle. That's my group coaching membership program, where for a fraction of the price that you would pay to do private coaching with me, you get to be in contact with me throughout the day, most days of the week, through a private forum. You get to be in contact with other women who are going through the same struggles that you are, and you get to celebrate together, and you get to cry together when that happens too. And there is a monthly lecture that I give on a pertinent dating issue that people are going through, and you get to ask questions on a teleconference. So check out lastfirstdate.com/coaching, and you can see all the different coaching programs that I have. Today's show is sponsored by Audible.com, which is a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. You can listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you like. And if you sign up at audibletrial.com/lastfirstdate, you'll get a free book and a free 30-day trial. So it's a fantastic deal, and Audible books are just fantastic. Anybody you know who listens to Audible, I mean, you can get any book, listen to them on the road, while you're jogging. So go to audibletrial.com/lastfirstdate. And now I'd like to introduce our guest, Dr. Jeanette Raymond. She's a psychologist and a psychotherapist with a private practice in L.A. She was born in Calcutta, India, and she was educated in Great Britain. She got her master's in education before beginning her career as a child and educational psychologist. After settling in America, she obtained her PhD in clinical psychology, and she switched her focus to helping adults establish more secure relationships. She contributes to training courses for psychotherapists and offers insights and relationship advice on a regular basis via her blogs and her videos. And without further ado, Dr. Jeanette Raymond, hello.
Hello, Sandy. Great to be with you.
Great to have you. We already have a caller on the line, which I will take your question in a few minutes. But let's talk a little bit about, first of all, what motivated you to write the book, Now You Want Me, Now You Don't?
Well, thanks for asking me that, Sandy, because, you know, without that, people don't get an idea of what their lives are, you know, getting stuck in. So two reasons. One, I noticed that people are always asking me, you know, I want to get close to my partner, you know, particularly men, but I get pushed away all the time. So that's what I was hearing from my clients, whether they were single people with partners or married people saying, I want to get close to my partner and I can't, I don't know how to do it, whatever I do doesn't work. So I thought, okay, that's one thing that people need. And then the second thing was, I noticed that when I had couples in my office, one partner would make an attempt to get close to the other, and the other person who said they wanted to get close rebuffed them. And the reverse would happen later in the session. So I thought, gosh, you know, they say they want to get close, but what they actually do when somebody gets close is they get really scared and push them away. So I thought, this is something I need to deal with. And the other thing is I noticed that when I had somebody in the room just with me, they were complaining about not being able to get close with their partners outside of the therapy office. But when I try to get close to them and be with them and empathize and, you know, really hold their hand through the difficult journey, they would push me away. So I thought, I really need to help people understand that even though they want to get close, they may have a lot of fears that either prevent them from getting close, or the person they're trying to get close to is terrified because of certain issues that scared them when they were growing up, and it's not the person's fault who's trying to get close. They need to understand what the fears are of their partner who keeps pushing them away.
And it's such a common thing, you know, people talk about commitment phobic and things like that, but they don't get to the meat always of what's behind it, the fears, because, you know, if we just sit there and point fingers and say, oh, he's such a jerk, he's commitment phobe, and I was so stupid to get involved. It's much more complex than that, I think, right?
Oh, absolutely, yes. You know, people don't, I mean, the people who are afraid are not even aware of where their fears are coming from. They just know they need to feel safe. And they'll do anything at the moment to prevent whatever they think is threatening to them.
You know, it's interesting. you know, I talked at the beginning about wanting to divorce-proof my life and chose somebody who I thought was safe. And, you know, that need for safety, because my heart had been broken, I didn't really understand how to learn from that. I just shut down more. And I speak about that a lot because I think that's a common reaction, that you just close your heart down instead of saying, oh, let me figure out why that happened and what do I need to do differently next time to continue to have intimacy but not leave my heart wide open, you know, to be stepped on. I think that's a really important piece that people miss often.
Yes, you know, because it's unconscious. You do it automatically. You just react in a way that protects you in the moment, and you don't realize the loss of the closeness that you might have had because you're too afraid to trust it.
Right.
You know, it becomes an enemy with whom you have to fight or guard against. So even though you might want it and long for it and dream about it and fantasize about it, where of course it's safe in your fantasy and in your dream world, you can have as much closeness and emotional connection with whoever in your fantasy world. But in the real world, that kind of closeness becomes an enemy that you have to battle.
Yeah, it's scary to open your heart up like that. And unless you really have the tools to deal with it. And, you know, a lot of people start relationships, and I see it very commonly at this age, you know, over 40, over 50. I've seen men who just jump in. You know, I've seen women jump in too, but I've seen it a lot with men who are, you know, one of my very first boyfriends after my divorce was a man who, he just wanted to shut everything down and be my boyfriend, you know, immediately, shut down his profile. I had just started dating, and it was scary. But he said to me, you don't have to do that. I'm just going to shut mine down. And, you know, you take your time. You're just exploring. And it was this weird kind of thing to say to me because on the one hand, he gave me space. On the other hand, he was all in. And to the point where it felt suffocating to me, and it felt not, I didn't trust it because it was too fast.
Yes,
so
that's
so
a
what
lot
would
of
you say? Pressure. I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, that's a lot of pressure on you.
Right, even though he said this is not pressure. He said, you know, you take your time and I'm hoping you'll choose me. Basically, that's really what he wanted. So it was kind of this double message, you know, yes, you should take your time, but here I am, I'm waiting, and I'm giving everything else up in the process.
Right. And it engenders a lot of guilt because if he's doing it all and he's all in and you're not, you're doing it more slowly and or more gradually, it engenders guilt, and that is one of the things that stops intimacy, emotional closeness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so what are the most common mistakes that men make in trying to get emotionally close to their partners?
Well, I think the one that really hits you is when they try to be romantic. You know, they think that if they buy their partner flowers and take them to dinners and romance them with, you know, wonderful trips and, you know, spoil them, let's put it that way. If they spoil them, then the woman is going to soften and she's going to let the man in, and he will then become the one whom she's close to, who she comforts and soothes. In other words, he becomes the only one on her radar. So the way I like to think of it is the romance is kind of taking down all the barriers between them, and he thinks that he can get inside that wall to penetrate the wall that she's putting up, so that she then takes care of him emotionally, all his emotional needs, because he didn't get that as a kid, because, you know, men are told you have to be strong and don't cry and solve problems, not talk about feelings. So the mistake is that if you romance your partner, you will get that intimacy. Well, if you think about it, buying clothes, taking someone to dinner, or, you know, spoiling them is actually a barrier to intimacy because you can't get close with clothes, food, spa treatments, you know, travel plans or whatever. They become the actual barrier between the two of them. And in my experience, when a woman gets romance, well, she loves it, of course. She likes to get spoiled. Who wouldn't? But she doesn't then want to get close to the man because she then sees him as a kind of baby who's trying to get around her, you know, manipulate her, trying to get something from her. It becomes kind of like what you were saying about this boyfriend who said, oh, you take your time, but I'm all in. Well, it's really saying, I want something for you, from you, and I'm going to, you know, I'm going to be there no matter how long it takes, but I'm expecting something from you at the end.
Right.
And it's kind of like that. So men make that mistake. They try to woo the woman by saying, look what I'm giving you. Look how nicely I'm treating you. Look how long I'm waiting for this. Look how patient I am. Look at all these things. Look at what a good boy I am. They try to be a good boy. And then the woman sees him as, oh, it's nice to get spoiled. He's a little boy. He's not a man. He's not somebody. He's not her equal. He's not her partner. So there's no way they can connect because the essence of emotional intimacy is to be equally together in exchanging where you're at any one moment in time and where your partner's at. It's having that intimate connection in the moment, in the here and now. It's not about who's good and who's bad. And who's spoiling who wants something from you, from who. So that's the biggest mistake that they make.
So interesting. I think that this whole idea of good boy and men being boys and not being men, that's a huge issue in today's society, especially, I think, because women have taken on so much strength in the workplace that often men don't know how to relate to this new woman, especially men over, you know, in midlife. And that's been the biggest turnoff to me as a woman dating again, is that I meet a lot of men who are not really men. They're little boys. They want approval. They're trying really hard to please. And they don't stand up for what they believe in. But that little boy is appealing. And I want to say that, and I want to hear your opinion about that, because I think, you know, having a man who's strong, who's not afraid to have opinions and express them without making you wrong, a man who's secure in himself and is, you know, has gone after what he wants in life and is passionate, that's really appealing. And at the same time, there's that little boy inside where he's not afraid to express emotion with a woman that he builds trust with, and he's not afraid to be vulnerable. To me, that's that place where women melt, seeing that dichotomy of the really strong man with the little boy inside, without him being dependent and, you know, take care of me, but he's not afraid to show emotion. I mean, so I just wanted to get your opinion on that part of the little boy. Is that a healthy part of the little boy to you?
Well, I think the men that I work with, they are little boys and they want that connection with the maternal mother figure because they didn't get it growing up. And I think for a woman, she wants a partner, not someone to take care of, because, you know, the saying is, I've already got two kids, I don't want a third, you know, kind of like that. But the little boy is appealing because he's so in love with his mom. He thinks she's, you know, everything, an ideal person, and he wants to give her things and make her happy and do things for her, because that's how he got love as a kid. He didn't get love because he was a person in his own right that the mother loved, irrespective of him being her son. So now he doesn't, and same for women, you know, they don't, a lot of women like to take care of men because it's an easy way of having a relationship. And they learned growing up that when you do caretaking for your family and your friends and so on, you get a reward, you know, they put you in their circle of friends. The only thing is, you can't have an emotionally close relationship if that's the deal. Because emotional closeness means equality. It's kind of like you, what you said. You have to have your own opinions. You have to be secure. You have to be ready to have an equal relationship. A lot of the couples that I see, or the individuals that I see who talk about the struggles in their marriage or their relationship, what I notice is they have zero equality. They play different roles in their relationship, and they switch roles and they change roles, but they're never equal. They do nothing together. So they cannot have any emotional intimacy. And then they wonder why they're working so hard, they're trying, they're putting so much effort, commitment, investment in the relationship, and they end up feeling, well, what's the point? I didn't get anything out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And tomorrow I have to get up and do it all again, and there's no reward. And by reward, I think what they mean is that their partner loves them for who they are, not whether they did the laundry or picked up the kids from school or earned $200 billion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're speaking a lot of wisdom. I think that people start tallying up, you know, I did this for you, you didn't do this for me. And, you know, what's missing is that deep connection, that emotional intimacy. It's not, I did five things for you and now you only did one thing back, or I can't rely on you for anything. It's so much deeper than that. And I think people don't know how to create it. They don't know how, they don't even know that it's missing often.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I just want to take a call. For a moment. So I'm going to unmute our caller with a 617 exchange. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. This is me. Yeah, you're talking to me. Yeah. Hi, this is Leslie.
Yeah. Hi, Leslie.
This is an interesting conversation. I don't know. Well, I'm, you know, sort of just recently, you know, starting the dating process again. And, and actually in the next week, I'm looking forward. I have two new dates. You know, I'll be meeting, two different men for the first time. So, you know, it feels kind of nice to have those set up and, you know, wondering what they'll be like. So how does one start to, you know, establish the emotional intimacy early on? What are some of the things that, you know, I should be looking for, or I should be trying to do to, you know, to kind of, you know, just get the right, the right atmosphere and everything, and, you know, feeling between us, and, you know, what direction should the talk be going in? How do we approach this? Or how do I approach it?
Okay. Leslie, this is Dr. Raymond. I'm so glad you asked that question.
Okay, good.
It's when you start the dating process that the emotional intimacy, you have to lay the groundwork for it. So you're really right on the money when you ask that question. So one of the things I would suggest to you is to, before you go on your date, check in your mind, do you have any expectations about how your date should look, how they should treat you, how they should be with you during the date? Do you have any expectations right now?
I guess I do. I guess I have expectations that we'll have quote, interesting discussions, and, you know, I'll ask about him and he'll ask about me, and there'll be, you know, kind of mutual interest in both sides and, you know, wanting to get to know more about each other.
Okay, that's a really healthy way of looking at it. What I find is many people go in with so many criteria because they want to eliminate the bad guys when they date, you know, so they go in with a checklist, and then they cross out the checklist. But what I'm hearing from you is you're kind of open and you're wanting to explore. That is really, really healthy, and it's a really good place to start from.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, I mean, I feel like I've already done the eliminating, you know, either right. online or on the phone. And,
right.
You know, so, you know, I mean, you know, I haven't talked a lot with these two men, but, you know, kind of enough right. to feel like there's enough to go on to make a worthwhile meeting.
Okay. So then what I would suggest you might like to consider is sharing something, things about yourself that tell about you, the person, as opposed to what your achievements are,
uh-huh.
you know, what you've attained. Because most people tend to do that. When you meet somebody for the first time, they
right.
say, well, what do you do? And you tell them what, you know, what your skill set is or what job you're
uh-huh.
in. You kind of talk about your professional persona
uh-huh.
or your past history, as opposed to the kind of person you are. Because
yeah.
if you're able to do that, your date will share similar things. Otherwise, it'll
uh-huh.
just be the false persona. You know,
right.
this is who I am. This is my status in life. And this
right.
is how
yeah.
it's kind of scoring points, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Who
right.
achieves the most? So if you talk about yourself as a person, like what you like, who you are, and invite, ask questions of your date in the same way, then
uh-huh.
you're beginning to go into the channel where you can get close and be equal. It's not about who did what, who had the most pain in their life, who's who,
uh-huh.
who had the worst childhood and things like that. Because a lot of people
uh-huh.
do that, and it
uh-huh.
becomes a shield, and you can't get through that shield anymore.
Right.
And another thing that to look for and try to avoid is, you know, sometimes when we a date, but you're a little bit nervous, you don't
uh-huh.
know what to expect. Some people talk a lot, and it's kind of like building a wall between you and your
right.
date. If you talk too much and they don't get a chance to share and invite, it becomes an avoidance strategy for emotional
right.
closeness. So just give a little snippet and then invite them to
mm-hmm.
do the same. And make it more of an equal exchange, as opposed to one person giving a lecture and then the other person giving a lecture.
Right.
People tend to do that when they're nervous.
Right. Yeah, I know. Yeah, okay. No, that sounds interesting. So just, you know, kind of tell more about myself, what I like in different areas.
Yeah.
Because
they're marrying the person. They're not marrying your achievements.
Achievements, right, yeah. Uh-huh. So, yeah, I said
marry, but I meant dating.
Right, yeah. I mean, it might come down to, it could come down to what, you know, what I'm looking for in a relationship, in a man.
Yeah, yes.
You know, I suppose
yes.
that can come up too, yeah.
Yeah, because then, you know, later on, you might feel very disappointed that he's not the man you thought he was or appeared to be. So this
right.
is a way of kind of being a little, I call it being emotionally naked, and by that I don't mean you tell them, oh, crying and all that. I
right.
just be open about where you're at in the moment. Just be present in the moment and
right.
call whatever comes up for you. You don't have to guard and censor and think
mm-hmm.
200 times about what to say, because
yeah.
that makes you uncomfortable and it makes you seem as if
mm-hmm.
you're insecure.
Right. Yeah. Okay. No, that's helpful. That sounds good. I'll keep it in mind as I'm meeting them over the next week.
Great. And I wish you a lot of luck.
Okay. Thanks. Thanks so much.
Yeah, Leslie. Mm-hmm. Good luck. And
okay.
And use some of those things that we wrote about in your profile essay, because those
right,
are
okay.
those kinds of statements. Because we stayed away from your career achievements. It's, you know, those
mm-hmm.
are your passions
right.
and the things that really he'll connect with his heart. And
right.
and by the way, if he talks too much, because, you know, we're talking about if you talk too much, but if he talks too much, you know, you can also interrupt and redirect the conversation.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, don't just nod your head and tolerate.
Right, yeah.
But, you know, politely redirect and, you know, bring in another one of these little snippets, because that really helps.
Yeah. Okay, sounds great. Okay, thanks so much.
Okay, thanks for calling in, Leslie. Go back
okay,
on your date.
Okay, thank you. Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks again.
Okay.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, mute back up. So that was great. So it's really important to lay the groundwork from the very beginning, and people don't realize that they can. It starts really early on.
Yes, and I think most people are too scared because they think they're divulging too much, and what will they think of me? And these are some of the fears that people have generally when they're in a place where they want to get intimate, but they're scared. Some of the things they tell me are, in fact, I'm working with a woman in her early 40s who's still looking for a guy, and she's in the dating scene, but she has so many criteria that nobody ever meets them. So, and we talk about how this is a fear of intimacy, that she can't tolerate the closeness. So she makes sure that she doesn't like anyone.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it works. But
that's a very common. People have long lists. And
right.
I had a new client this morning, and she was saying, I don't have a list. I'm so open to who I'm going to meet and how he's going to show up. I need certain things about intellectual connection and things like that. But she was so open. It was so wonderful to hear, how she approached dating. And that's the healthiest way to approach it.
Right.
I just want to take another quick break for a second, and then we'll get back to some more great questions about emotional intimacy, and give another shout out to Last First Date Radio sponsor Audible.com. They are a leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment and information, and they have over 150,000 titles that you can choose from, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're listening to Last First Date Radio on right now. So if you sign up at audibletrial.com/lastfirstdate, you're going to get one free audiobook and a one-month trial of the service. Some of the books that are on the Audible bestseller list right now are The Alchemist, which is, I think, on their 25th anniversary. I just saw the author being interviewed by Oprah and on her Super Soul Sunday. That was amazing. He's such a cool guy. Have you read that book, The Alchemist?
Jeanette? No, I have not yet. No.
Okay, it's such an interesting book. It's a fable about following your dream, and he wrote it when he was pretty young, and his parents thought he was crazy because he wanted to be a writer, and he was telling Oprah he was institutionalized, I think, 3 or 4 times in a mental institution because he wanted to be a writer.
Oh.
And boy, he's now written about 31 books.
Mm-hmm.
And this book became a guide to so many people, including Pharrell. Some very famous people found him to be an amazing influence. And The Goldfinch, which is on the bestseller list, The Invention of Wings, How to Win Friends and Influence People. The Oprah book, What I Know for Sure, is now on Audible, and one of my clients recommended that. So pretty much any book that you want to read, you can listen to on audible.com. So why don't you go ahead and check out Audible and sign up for your free month and free audiobook by going to audibletrial.com/lastfirstdate. And I want to thank you for your support of Last First Date's radio sponsor, Audible, and for giving yourself the gift of spoken audio entertainment. And now back to Dr. Jeanette Raymond, and we're talking about emotional intimacy and the fear of intimacy and how to manage it in your relationships. So, the book outlines a really tough case of a couple, and you mostly worked with the man. You did talk to the couple in the beginning and the end, correct?
Yeah.
What
I often find is one person in a couple is afraid that they're going to break up, so they try to get their partner to come to couple therapy, but that partner doesn't feel like it's their problem. So in my book, it's Rick who wanted to get close to his wife, and he felt he couldn't. He did everything possible and persuaded his wife to come in their fourth year of the marriage, because he really thought, it was going downhill and it would end up like his own parents' marriage when they got divorced, and you know, he had to be the man of the house. So she comes with him, and in the third session of couple therapy, she said, "Look, it's not my fault, it's yours. I'm leaving." And I persuaded him to stay and work with me. And I often find this to be the case, that when one person stays, because they're the one that are who are motivated to make it work, I can help them understand their partners when they bring me in all the, you know, heartache and the trials and tribulations that they've been through, and I can help them see both points of view. So this is the uniqueness of the book, is that I show you the couple, even though one of them isn't actually in session, she comes in through Rick's world, his experience of her, and I show both sides, which is what I try to do with people who are bringing in, you know, as I said, the troubles with their partner. And we call it mentalizing in psychology, because a lot of people have not had that as kids. They haven't learned to read people and understand their intent of what they're doing, which is what I help Rick do, you know. And if your parents haven't done that with you when you were infants, you grow up not learning it. And most of the people who end up in therapy have not had that experience. Their parents have not understood them and helped them to mentalize the intent of each other. So they don't have any empathy. They don't have this ability to understand each other's intent. And so they end up very anxious and insecure. And they then fall in love with somebody, and they think it's the answer to all their prayers, because it seems like that person is so interested and so focused and so invested in them, which of course they didn't have growing up, that they get attracted, they get married, and then they find, heck, I don't, this person doesn't care about me, they don't understand me, in fact, all they do is push me away. So then at the end of the therapy, about a year or 2 years later, and I'm trying to help the one person who's motivated to understand what they went through as kids and why they're at this point of desperation. And I also help them to understand the other partner who isn't in the therapy room but comes in there through the Rick's experience. And I help him understand 10 of the fears that she has about intimacy, because she wanted to get close to her dad as a kid and her mother, but her mother and father had their own issues and she was kind of left out. So he had his issues as a child of being, you know, having to grow up in where his father had an affair and it was secret, and then he left and he tried to be everything to his mother, which he now tries to be to his wife, and he's thwarted at every step. And what I try to say is, you know, people, a man or a woman, but in this case it's Rick, my protagonist, who tries to get emotionally close to his wife by being her savior, by being a hero, by being a good boy. And that's exactly the wrong way of approaching it. So people out there, when you think, I'm such a good person, I do everything right, and I try hard, and I'm a martyr, and I'm a slave, and I'm totally invested, that's why you're not getting close. Because if you're a martyr and a hero, you're up there on a pedestal, and your partner's down there on the ground. There's no way you can get close. It's only by being equal that you can get close.
Yeah, and the pedestal thing is a big issue for people, because the only thing the person can do is look down at you, and you're looking, you know, it's just bad. This is so important. I mean, everything that you're saying about the mentalizing the intent of the other, I think, you know, what I see so commonly in dating in particular is misinterpreting intent, and then go, you know, sometimes people overlook really big red flags because they want to believe so badly that the person is innocent. And often we just judge so quickly and react. And I find that, you know, in a new relationship, it's often a dance, you know, where I see myself navigating through oh my God, he just misinterpreted everything I just meant to say. And I'll say it now. I'll say, wow, it seems like we're having a communication glitch. You know, it sounds like you misinterpreted what I just said. Can I tell you what I really meant? And and that's so important, just to put it out there and just say, you know, you're not understanding me, and let's talk about it, so that you don't have to read somebody's mind. And, you know, but that's dealing with somebody who's able to have that conversation. You know, in the book, the couple that you outlined had so many really, really unhealthy beginnings that it was amazing that they could work through it at all. I mean, there was so much push and pull of two steps forward and five steps backwards. And and what was interesting is also watching you and your reaction and you being so transparent about how you responded, because it's got to take its toll on you as a therapist. And people often don't see that side. They don't pull back the curtain and say, well, the therapist is human. You know, that person was torturing you, you know. And you found ways to self-soothe and you know, garden and do things to heal yourself from being, you know, completely taken by that.
Well, you know, as a therapist, if you're working the way that I work, it's also important. It helps when you're realizing that Rick, who's my client, he has to beat me up in a way, if you like, because he couldn't beat his mother up for being, you're wanting him one moment and then saying, oh, I don't need you now, I've got someone else to go out with, or whatever, right? And the same with his dad. You know, his dad wanted him as a kid, they loved him, did everything with him, and then now he found someone else to be with and he's not interested in his son anymore. So he, you know, you can imagine the rage. We'd all be enraged with that kind of experience. But he couldn't beat any of them up because they're his parents and he wants them to love him. And so he has to protect them from his rage. So in the therapy, I have to be the one who can handle the rage and survive it. And that's how he can then be healed, if you like. That's a very necessary part of the therapy, that I have to let him beat me black and blue and show him that, A, it's okay, I get it, but I'll stop him if I think he's, you know, going overboard, and let him know my reaction, because that's what he's missing. He doesn't know the impact of his words or his actions on me in the same way as he had no idea of the impact of his words and his actions on his wife. He imagined them to be beneficial and benign when, in fact, they were received as cruel and scary.
So and people can't hear that very often. I mean, I think in couples, especially long-term couples, and especially as your relationship can be unraveling, there's so much defensiveness and an inability to really be open to hearing, you know, this is hurtful. And, I mean, even in my own marriage, you know, I had so many conversations with my husband about what wasn't working for me and what I really, it wasn't, to me, it wasn't that difficult for him to make those changes because they were changes that I could make, but it was hard for him. And when I finally said goodbye, this is it, for the last time, it was like an anvil over the head. You know, it was just an awakening to, oh, wow, I'm really going to lose her. And let me think about what she said. And he actually did make a lot of changes at the end that really improved his life and improved our divorce process tremendously. But it was not something he could be receptive to until that point. So it was really interesting, I think, you know. So why does that happen? Why, you know, at the point of I'm going to lose everything, some people wake up.
Well, you know, there's a belief, which I think is actually true, that many people don't feel motivated unless there's a crisis. You know, and the longer you stay with him and give him a chance and all this sort of thing, because we keep hoping that somehow they will get it and do things, you know, take proactive actions instead of trying to fix it all at the end. For many people, there is no motivation in that area of the spectrum. It has to be a particular crisis, just like most people come to therapy when there's a crisis. When we all say, oh, I wish you'd come earlier, or you could have prevented this, they don't get it. They don't see it that way because they weren't feeling bad enough. Sometimes you have to feel bad enough. And it's kind of like what Jung said. You have to want to set yourself on fire in order to change. And that can only come when you're at the bottom, you know, and Alcohol Anonymous, you know, AA and all the offshoots of AA say the same thing. When you get to rock bottom, there's only one way, and that's up. And that's what happens to some people, that they need to go to that rock bottom place because there's zero motivation at any other time. You know, they think that they don't need to do anything, that you'll do it.
Right, and even at rock bottom, as soon as they pull out, often they go right back. And I've seen that with some of my clients. They have the worst crisis. People end up in the hospital from stress, you know, and they go right back to the same job, the same relationship. Don't make any changes. Mm-hmm. It's just too scary to rock the boat. So let's talk about, you know, how can people you know, reverse this? How can they, how can you make, it's like you're in a relationship where there is this lack of emotional intimacy or a fear of intimacy, how can you start to develop like a safety and have your partner feel that it's safe to get close?
Well, there are lots of different ways, but we have to start with the least intrusive in order to get this safety net woven strong enough so that they can feel the safety. So that the least intrusive way for couples, and it can be any couple obviously, is to begin to share little chores together. You know, togetherness creates a comfort zone where you're more likely to share things about yourself that creates intimacy. So if you do a little bit of the laundry together, or the shopping, or the cleaning, or the collection of kids from school, or gardening, whatever it might be. And it doesn't have to be for hours on end. But you can share, you can join in the tasks. And that sense of togetherness creates equality, and it gives you a here and now. Like, oh, I'm feeling, I'm feeling really happy right now to be with you because it reminds me of the time when I helped my dad rake leaves in autumn in our garden. And it was such a lovely time because my dad was relaxed and he told me stories about his childhood, and we loved to make a bonfire with the leaves. And then the other person gives you a message. So you begin to weave a connection of your present with your past, and you've created a moment of intimacy because you're sharing things about yourself with each other, but in the least intrusive way. So that's one thing. And a lot of couples don't do that because all I hear is about division of labor. You do the gardening, I do the cooking. You do the school run, I do the late night getting, you know, ready for school the next day. Everything is divided up. Then there's no time to be together.
Right.
They're just tired, and all they're doing is saying, well, I did this and you didn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, and all that. So really, sharing chores is actually a good way. And while you're doing it, by the way, in the here and now, and you're sharing exactly what's coming, there's no censoring or guarding or whatever, your body begins to release oxytocin, which is the bonding hormone. And it makes you want to do it again, and it makes you want to feel closer. So then you might share something more intimate of, I really liked it when we were doing the gardening and our hands touched, or we both tried to cut the same branch at the same time. It was so funny. So you begin to be a little bit more intimate about the moment rather than just sharing your memories of the past, although, you know, the both are important. So that's one way. you know. Mm-hmm. And another way, you know, because we're kind of upping the ante as we go along, that was the least intrusive. So then the next way might be to think about sharing your reaction when your partner says something to you or responds to you in a way that made you feel like you were rebuffed or you were misunderstood. You know, it hurts us. And we might want to shut down, just like you were mentioning earlier on. You don't want to say any more. You don't want to give any more help or advice, or you don't want to talk anymore because they have, you know, slapped you around and made you feel stupid, silly, you know, unimportant.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things I suggest is if you say right in that moment, I'm feeling hurt, you know, I'm feeling that you don't care about me, you don't want me near you right now, that's going to really get inside your partner because you're talking about you and what the impact of their words or actions had on you. What most people tend to do, which doesn't work, is, you know, they call each other names. Oh, you're a, they make accusations about, you know, you're impatient, you don't care, you're horrible, you did this and you did that and you did the other. So they come from that defensive place that you just mentioned, where they try to put all the badness in the other person that they're feeling themselves. So they don't want to feel bad. They make the other, they accuse the other person of being the monster, let's say, you know, the ogre and the monster. So as soon as they do that, they shut the door to intimacy, because if you accuse somebody, you're going to have a battle and you're each going to be behind your defensive walls and you're going to completely obliterate the possibility of any closeness. But if you start talking about your feelings, the impact the other person had on you, they're going to hear it because they don't want to feel like bad people. They don't want to feel like they're mean, they're cruel, they're, you know, deliberately sadistic and so on. So they're not going to want to feel that way. So they're going to be interested in the impact on you and want to know why you felt that way. What was it in the way that they spoke or the words that they used that made you feel bad? So immediately you have a channel of communication where you're both equal. They're not the boss and you're not the person who did wrong and has to feel ashamed and you know, put your head in the corner. You're saying, I'm as equal as you. This is how your words and your actions impacted me, and you need to have a sense of how you come across. And they don't want to come across that way. So that creates intimacy. You know, the person wants to know and share and feelings. So that's really, really important. Don't just shut down or accuse them.
So important and so rare that people actually will do something different. But the name-calling, the labeling, and this goes for your children also, where you know, I always say practice at home. If you can manage in your toughest relationship with the people that you love, you know, it's so helpful when you're out there in a relationship with, you know, with emotional intimacy with somebody of the opposite sex, or, you know, same sex if that's your preference. Those are great suggestions.
I think this is really important, so I'm just going to add it. One of the reasons people don't want to do it is because they think that if they share their feelings, that they are giving the message that they're weak and that the other person's going to take advantage of them if they say, you know, you hurt me or you made me feel unimportant or you made me feel ashamed or whatever it is. That they don't do it because they think they're giving the other person more ammunition to hurt them the next time. And what I have to teach them is, and I do it in the book, obviously I teach Rick, that no, it's not being weak. It's really showing the other person the impact they have on you and that you're not going to just take it lying down. Doesn't mean you have to fight back by being accusatory or mean or trying to win the battle, but it's really about saying, I want you to know how our relationship impacts each other, how we get impacted in our relationship that makes us both feel bad. And neither of us want this because it drives us apart. If we actually want to understand and get close and support each other, then we have to understand each other's feelings in the moment. This is how I'm feeling right now when you say or do this to me. And I wonder how you're feeling right now when I tell you that. That's the important piece.
Yeah, that's an important piece to not forget, to check in with the other person too. It's not just about you.
Right.
But being able to be that open and vulnerable, which is very scary for most people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and having grown up around the model of martyr, victim, and around a lot of accusations and judgments and false judgments and everyone else is wrong, you know, this has been a huge thing for me to learn, to really have better skills. And so I really get it. I mean, I get how most of us are struggling with this. Our parents do the best that they can for the most part, and they don't mean to be training us to have bad skills out there. But we get to do better. And that's what's so wonderful about people like you who can give us information about how to overcome our fears and get closer, because that's really what we want. We want to be close and we want to have intimacy. That's the ultimate. And blocking intimacy is just, it's so sad to see people who are in their 60s who are so afraid of intimacy and have not dated in 20 years because they're afraid of getting hurt. I hear stories like this all the time, you know, and the men I grew up with were like this. And so, you know, these guys were drunks and I don't want a drunk, you know, and I'm going to stay away from men and I'm going to build a really good life for myself, which is wonderful. And it's also missing intimacy. It's missing this kind of intimacy that is so wonderful when you have it, you know, and it's a sad thing to give up.
Yeah, because I think a lot of people equate it with feeling needy, or you know, and to them that's so shameful because they grew up needing their parents, like we all do, to understand us and help us through whatever struggles we're going through in the moment. And when they didn't get it, they developed this idea inside them, but it must be wrong to be needy because, you know, I'm not getting my needs, so therefore it must be wrong. So they grow up thinking that being needy for emotional closeness is weak and shameful. And that's the biggest barrier to allowing yourself to be open.
Mm.
And it's the one thing that I have to work on, because we all need people, because we're social animals, we need people, but it doesn't mean you have to need people in the sense of being dependent on them for everything and not taking care of yourself in any way. The essence of emotional intimacy is allowing interdependence. You need them to understand where you're at any one moment in time so that they can be with you. If they can't understand where you're at, how can they be with you and hold your hand through that journey? And vice versa. So you, in order to have that partner in life, not somebody who's above you or below you, but an equal partner in the relationship, you have to have a need for closeness. And the need for closeness can only come if you share where you're at in the here and now and not think that you're weak for having those feelings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really important. And I love how you keep bringing equality into this, because it's really about interdependency, and it's a difficult thing to achieve for most people, but it doesn't have to be. And you know, and being vulnerable, not feeling shame about needing intimacy and needing to be open, that there's actually tremendous strength in owning, you know, every part of you and every part of your partner, that it's not about perfection. It's about Let's embrace our flaws. Let's embrace where we, the fact that we don't have it all together all the time, and that's fine.
Yeah, because that's just being human.
Exactly. And being human is fine. It's good. It's who we are.
Mm-hmm.
We have to call the show to an end. It went really fast for me. I just love this conversation. It's such an important conversation. I thank you so much, Dr. Raymond, for coming onto the show today. And just let people know how to find you and get your book, and just give us some information if you can.
But sure. Well, the book is called Now You Want Me, Now You Don't, Fear of Intimacy, 10 Ways to Recognize It and 10 Ways to Manage It in Your Relationship. You can get the book on Amazon, but I also have a website for the book, Now You Want Me, Now You Don't, and there's a lot of information there. There's excerpts, there's information about the characters, and there's also a set of videos and more information about the top 7 emotional intimacy problems. And I would highly recommend you to sign up for my free newsletter. Every week you get a blog, and it could be a video blog or just a written blog. And they're about all kinds of things, relationships, including dating and parenting, and all kinds of other relationships. And it's absolutely free. And you can supplement that with the book. You know, and the book will give you a really bird's eye view of the therapy and two sides of a couple's experience, which I think is very rare out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I enjoyed about the book so much. And the third side, which was your side. So thank you so much. This has been wonderful, and I really enjoyed having you on the show. And I wish you much luck with your career and helping so many people develop emotional intimacy. And I want to thank all of our listeners for listening in today, and for those who called in, thank you so much. And I hope that you all go on your last first date very soon. Have a great day.